Hi, everybody. This is Dennis Mann with Dennis Mann's Podcast. Today is Saturday, September 9th, 2017, and we're going to look at Kristen Modafferi's case today. And we're going to take a look at her roommates when she had flown from her hometown of Charlotte, North Carolina, to the Bay Area. She rented a room in Oakland, California. And I hesitate a little bit to even do this podcast because there's no indication at all that the roommates have anything to do with Kristen Modafferi's disappearance, okay? But with that said, you know, we don't know what happened to Kristen. Anything is possible. But the roommates have been, they've been pretty good when I wanted to talk to them about Kristen's disappearance. And I'll tell you what I know, and you can make up your own mind. But with that said, I just want to state firmly, I believe that whatever happened to Kristen Modafferi, I think it has to do with John Onuma and Jill Lampo. So that's what my experience tells me. I don't know if I'm right, but that's what I believe. Okay. So anyway, Kristen, like I said, for people who don't remember, she was a pretty sharp kid. She graduated from high school a year early and got a four-year academic scholarship to North Carolina State University. And so while most kids are 18 years old trying to get their high school degree, Kristen was already living away from home up at the dorms up at North Carolina State University, and she just completed her freshman year. Now, between the freshman and sophomore years, the university instructors were encouraging the kids to spend the summer and get away from home, go do something different to get a life experience. And Kristen really bought into that idea. She says, you know, I'd love to go to San Francisco. It's a cosmopolitan city, worldwide famous city. For the first time ever, I'll truly live on my own. Because even when she was at NC State, she was still in the dorms and a somewhat controlled environment there. But here, she got the first time ever just to live on her own, pay her own bills. And so she really bugged her parents for a long time to let her go. They said no about 1,000 times. But then they finally relented and said, you know, Kristen has been nothing but a source of pride and joy for our family. Let's encourage her ambitions. And they reluctantly said, okay, you can go, but be careful. And so Kristen was overjoyed. And in the very, very, very early days of the internet, even predated cell phones, but Kristen was online. I guess it was dial-up back then. And she was looking for places to live in San Francisco, but the rents there were just too crazy. They were just sky high. She goes, I can't live in San Francisco. It's just way too expensive. So she decided to look at Oakland. In Oakland, the rents were a little more reasonable. And she contacted an ad that had a room for rent. And she actually got the guy on the phone. His name was Griffin Cherry. And he said, well, here's what happened. He said, it's a big house. We got like three other roommates. And I was living here with my girlfriend, but we actually broke up. And she's actually going to go to Paris, France for the summer. And so her room is now open. So we just put an ad in to rent that room out. And like I said, the girl, her name was Rosie Levine. And Griffin, they said that, you know, it was a mutual breakup. They weren't mad at each other. They just decided at that point in their life, they just wanted to go different ways for a while. And Griffin turned out to be right because they reconnected later on, and they've been married now many, many years. So he was right about what he said then. So the room for rent was actually Rosie Levine's as she moved out and spent the summer in Paris, France. And Kristen said, you know, I'd love to have that room. And Griffin was honest about the house. He said, let me tell you a little history with this house. The house, when they put the ad up on the internet, was already in foreclosure. The people that bought the house, that turned around and rented it out to Griffin and the other roommates, they weren't paying the mortgage on the house, and they got an eviction notice. But the real estate laws, I guess in California, are so crazy that if you want to get somebody evicted, it takes like 5-6 months to evict somebody. And Griffin, he said, you know, we all know we have to leave here in a couple months. But Kristen said, well, I only need 2 or 3 months. He goes, well, that's plenty of time. If you want to come, we'd love to have you. She says, I'll take the room. And so when Kristen flew to Oakland, the first time she met her roommates, they actually picked her up at the airport. If you're back in the day, back in the Bay Area, San Francisco, that's really not out of the norm. I know people say, why would you allow that to happen? But in hindsight, they never would have. But back then, a lot of people in San Francisco and the Bay Area, that's just the way people live their lives. They need a room to rent for a while, and they just rent it. So it was not uncommon at all. So Kristen arrives at the Bay Area. Like I said, she has four roommates at the time. It was Griffin, Cherry. Now, Griffin was the older one. He was about, I'm guessing about the age now, but he was like 27, 28 years old at the time. Then there was two brothers, Kurt and Hans, H-A-N-S, Opsahl, and another gentleman by the name of Justin Neusler. And it was Kristen. And like I said, so Kristen gets to the house. If you're familiar with Oakland, it's right off of Lake Merritt there. And she gets out of bed the next morning, and she is like on a mission. She has to get a job, because it was June 1st of 1997. It was her 18th birthday when she landed in Oakland. And she was going to take some classes out of Berkeley that was going to apply back to her degree back in North Carolina. The credits would transfer. And so she signed up for a photography class and an elective dance class. It was actually a belly dancing class, but it was NC State was going to take the credit, so she did it. She didn't want any heavy classes, just some fun stuff to do. And the classes were to begin on June 24th. So Kristen had 23 days to be a tourist, to get as much as she could from the San Francisco lifestyle, the experience out there. And then on the 24th, it was back to business. So Kristen starts passing out flyers everywhere, and she walked into Spinelli's Coffee in the Crocker Galleria, and she met a manager there by the name of Bernadette Melvin. And Bernadette had no hours. She really said, I don't have any hours to give anybody. But she was so affected by Kristen's ambitions, and when she learned Kristen's story, she said, Kristen, I don't have any room for you here, but I'm going to make room because I like you so much. So you're hired. I can't give you 40 hours, but I'll find some hours and we'll get you working. So like in a day, Kristen had a job. That was just the kind of kid she was, you know. But that didn't stop her. She kept on. She knew she needed more hours, so she kept on putting resumes out, and she got a second job at the Museum of Modern Art in the coffee shop there. But those classes weren't supposed to start until like June 20, or that job, the weekend job, wasn't supposed to start until later in the month. So for the first part of June, Kristen worked at Spinelli's, then she'd travel, and then she'd go home late at night. And it was Groundhog Day. Every day was pretty much the same in, as far as wake up, go to Spinelli's, become a tourist from like 3:30 to about 10:30 at night, and then head back on the BART to Oakland. So when the 23rd and 24th came, Kristen didn't come home. Here's where things get a little dicey. The roommates never called Bob and Debbie Modafferi, so we don't know where your daughter is. The very first time things really kicked into high gear is when Bob Modafferi called out to Oakland, said, have you seen my daughter? And they said, Mr. Modafferi, no, but we were getting ready to call you. And that's when everything hit the fan, because Kristen had a girlfriend, and they were supposed to take that belly dancing class together. And the girlfriend kept on calling Kristen. She wasn't returning her calls, and she was actually mad at Kristen for blowing her off. And she said, well, I'll see her tomorrow at the class. And when Kristen didn't show up at the belly dancing class, she called the roommate, said, where is Kristen? And they said, you know, she hasn't come home in a couple of days. And so this girl and Kristen's friend and the roommates, they decided, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? And it was decided that they were going to let her friend call the parents. And I asked Griffin and the roommates, how come you guys didn't call Kristen's parents right away? And they said, Dennis, we didn't really know her that well. She just moved in, and we just thought maybe she had a boyfriend. She was staying with him, and it's not really our business to invade on her privacy by calling her parents back east when she's just with a boyfriend or something. So that's the answer they gave me, and that actually kind of makes sense. So I don't really fault him for that. But and the other thing that was kind of interesting is that the private eye, Tim Hames, he got on this thing very, very early. He was out of Los Banos, California. And he went up to the Jane Avenue, 274 Jane Avenue house where Kristen was living. And there wasn't anybody home at the time. And he just happened to look into the mailbox, and he pulled the mail out. And he noticed that some mail that was addressed to Kristen was opened. And he asked the roommates about it, and the roommates admitted that they had opened her mail. And they said, well, at the time, we were just looking for anything that might lead to what happened to Kristen. So, you know, and so you get the fact that they didn't call them out of fairies, which I kind of, going out on a limb here, I understand why they didn't, so I don't fault them for that. The opening the mail, you know, it's not the biggest crime in the world, but why do they do it? And then finally, the one that I don't understand to this day, from the very, very moment that Kristen was realized she was missing until the moment when you're hearing my voice right now, not one of the roommates has ever once called them out of fairies. That's not normal. That's not healthy. And we don't know if they're just indifferent to Kristen being missing. They don't care. That's one reason. Do they know something and they're just feeling guilty? Is that another reason? We don't know what the reason is. But I've met with everybody except for, remember I said it was Griffin Cherry, Justin Neusler, and then Hans and Kurt Opsahl. Let's go one by one. Like I said, Griffin was the older person in the house. He was the one that everybody pretty much looked up to. And out of the house, they ran a website business. They were one of the first people building websites. And they also had an office in Berkeley. It was right by the campus there. But they did a lot of their work out of the house. And then you had Hans and Kurt Opsahl. To this day, I've never spoken to Kurt. He won't talk to me. A part of the reason that I think Kurt went to school, I think, to become a lawyer, and they train those lawyers in school, don't talk to anybody, say nothing. And he's part of the, you can Google him, KurtOpsahl. He's really involved with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. It's about security on the internet. And I don't know if that plays any, he's just paranoid about talking to anybody about anything, and everything is like security, so don't say nothing to nobody. That may be it. But he's never once spoken to me. I've spoken to everybody else. I've spoken to his brother, Hans. Hans is a very, very nice guy. He's a very friendly, cordial. He lives in Berkeley now, I believe. He's out in Berkeley. I think if the Modafferis went to him, he would talk to them all day long. But you wonder why they don't pick up the phone and say, listen, is there anything I can do for your daughter? Let me know. But they don't do that. Now, the Modafferis did talk to him, I believe, when they went out there. And they said that the Sunday evening before Kristen disappeared, so this would be the 22nd, from like dinner time to about 10 o'clock at night, if my memory serves me correct, it was one time that everybody was home and everybody was relaxed, and they actually got to talk to Kristen a little bit. And she had mentioned that on the 21st, she went out to the summer solstice out at Land's End Beach. And she went out there with two women. And these two women have never come forward. So I've always found that suspicious. And my source for that is Hans. Because I was talking to Hans one day. I said, yeah, Kristen said that she wanted to go out to Land's End Beach. And she wanted to go out with a couple girlfriends. And he said the following morning, I think I got this right, Hans was actually doing the dishes early in the morning. And Kristen woke up and he said, did you go to that party the other night? And Kristen said, oh yeah, I went. And he said, did those two girls go? Oh yeah, they were there. But he never got their names. So, and then I mentioned the other girl was Rosie Levine. Like I said, she had left, I believe, before Kristen ever got there. I did get to talk to her once. She had come home once. I was in Lake Merritt in Oakland with one of my big signs. And if you know about Lake Merritt, it's just a beautiful lake in downtown Oakland. And hundreds, if not thousands, of people walk around that lake every night because it's well lit. It's a very safe area in downtown Oakland. And I was there one night, and she come up to me and says, hi, Dennis, I'm Rosie. And she said, you know, she wished me luck with Kristen, but she didn't know anything, and I believe her. I believe her. And the last person was Justin Neusler. Now, Justin, he was very nice. He talked to me several times. I remember once I called him, and he rode a motorcycle at the time, and he met me at a cafe one night and talked, and nothing out of the ordinary. He seemed very, very nice. But Justin did have an interesting story to tell me. Remember in the earlier podcast, we found out that Kristen lived at 274 Jane Avenue. Well, 278 Jane Avenue, the house right next door, it turned out to be a halfway house for probation violators for Oakland and Alameda County. And there were fighting dog rings in that house, methamphetamine raids in that house. It was a bad address, and the Modafferis never knew it. I know Bob and Debbie, they wouldn't allow their daughter anywhere near Jane Avenue if they knew that that house was on that street. And if you go to my Kristen and Kent companion Facebook page, I'll post a snapshot of the 274 Jane Avenue where Kristen lived, and you'll see how close to Kristen that halfway house was with those probation violators. And it's very possible, very, very possible, Kristen coming home late at night and somebody next door got Kristen. That's, to me, I still believe it's John Onuma and Jill Lampo, but it would not surprise me if it's somebody at 278 Jane Avenue that somehow interacted and got Kristen. If it turns out it was one of the roommates, now that would surprise me, and I don't think it is. But like I say, Justin, he was like Kristen. He needed a place to crash in the Bay Area for a few months, and he saw an ad on the internet, and it wasn't for Kristen's house, it was for that halfway house. So they were actually, not only were they a halfway house, they were also putting ads to rent rooms out. It was just a crazy situation. And Justin rode over on his motorcycle to look at a room in 278 Jane Avenue. And the person that he was supposed to meet wasn't there that day. And just by coincidence, on the porch next door, which is where Kristen was living, a couple guys were on the porch. I don't know if it was Griffin or Hans or Kurt, but they struck up a conversation with Justin. He mentioned he was looking for a place to live, and they said, hey, you know, we got a room here if you want to rent. We're looking to rent out a couple rooms. And Justin said, okay, I'll look at it. And sure enough, it was fine. Justin goes, if you'll rent it out to me, I'll take the room. So that's how Justin ended up living at 274 Jane Avenue. He got the room about a week before Kristen did. So, and Justin is pretty reliable. You can Google and look him up on the internet. He's been working for Wells Fargo for about 20 years now. So he's very stable. So, I'm being told that, Hans is, doesn't really have a job and, smokes a lot of marijuana, but, you know, that doesn't make you a guilty person and a missing person. But, of all the other roommates are pretty much employed and okay, but Hans is the one that's really looking for work, I believe. But like I say, he was very, very nice. He was very nice to me. But so that's pretty much the roommate situation. They were opening her mail. They never called the Modafferis, which that I understand. But in the last 20 years, they haven't called the Modafferis, and that I don't understand. And it's just very intriguing. If you're trying to figure out what's happening to Kristen, you're looking at everything. So we have to look at where Kristen was living. And I do apologize to the roommates. I don't really enjoy doing this podcast, to be honest with you. Okay, everybody. Well, thank you very much for listening. We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.